Family Room Podcast, where I, Peter Squires, get to know your friends and neighbors. My family, they never knew. My family, they never knew.
My family. Welcome to the Family Room Podcast, getting to know your friends and neighbors. I'm Peter Squires. My guest on this episode is Alyssa Sherman, who's an active and outspoken volunteer leader for Planned Parenthood in New Hampshire. Alyssa and I discussed the quest for decent pizza in New Hampshire, kayaking in the drinking water, 9/11, anti-Boston prejudice, running for office, media bias, women's health, bird dogging, and her relationship with Governor Chris Sununu, among other things. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. So when you came into North Country last week, we had a brief discussion about the area pizza.
Yeah.
I have an update.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm officially out on La Festa.
Yeah.
I'm over it. I'm like,
no. What happened? Did you have a bad experience?
Yeah, I went there and they had like this fresh pepperoni pie that looked amazing. And I was like, can I get a slice? Oh, and a like shitty, cold, been sitting out all day pepperoni pie.
Yep.
And I was like, can I get a slice from that one? And they were like, no, sorry, that's not a house pie. That's like, whatever. Somebody ordered it. It's fine.
Oh.
But then they're like, this one's just as good. We're going to heat it up for you. It'll get nice and melty. And I was like,
is it just as good?
Like, do you think I'm a child? Like, how dare you tell me that this pepperoni pie is just as good?
We'll heat it up for you and it will get nice and melty.
Right, yeah. Will you put a slice of American cheese on it for me? I was insulted. And not simultaneously, but like recently before that, I decided to pop in to try the Thirsty Moose pizza place.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't have any slices, so he's like, I'll make a fresh one. It'll just take like 5 minutes.
The one in Dover, like right
yeah.
on the corner?
Like yeah. next, so there's the Thirsty Moose, and then there's like their little side entrance like just for pizza.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I went in there, and he made like a fresh pie. Now, obviously, anywhere a fresh pie is going to be way better than a sitting around pie.
Yeah, naturally.
But it was really good.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been to the Thirsty Moose, but not for pizza.
Right. I've been to Thirsty Moose a ton of times and never gotten pizza.
Right.
So the other thing is, like, I'm really not supposed to eat pizza, but I, like, can't stop myself.
Why?
Because I'm lactose intolerant.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I'm just, like...
Yeah, just take some Lactaid or whatever. What is it?
Yeah.
Lactaid. Is it?
Yeah. Lactaid just sort of delays the inevitable, but, you know.
Well, at least till you get home.
Yeah, exactly. How close am I? Yeah. I can't eat dairy, like, on a long road trip. You
oh,
know?
I bet.
But if I'm on my way home, then
yeah,
you know,
we'll
I'll
take
my chances.
Pizza's so good. It sucks to be like no pizza.
I know.
Or cheese in general.
Oh God, don't remind me. But
sorry.
Anyway, a fresh slice or a fresh pie from the Thirsty Moose is actually like pretty damn good. And
did you have
decidedly
an old one?
Better.
Have you ever had an old slice?
Probably. And it, you know, was unremarkable. But yeah, it was like, I thought the crust specifically was decidedly better than the crust at La Festa.
Yeah.
Which was like one of my main qualms with them to begin with. The
well,
like floppy.
It is floppy.
Yeah.
It's because it's too oily and it's not like substantial enough.
And yeah, it's thin. I mean, I feel like if it's going to be thin, I don't understand pizza chemistry. Like what makes it so that if it's thin, it can also still be sturdy?
I don't know. You got to ask the New Yorker.
Doesn't have it. I know. Oh, yeah. So this is how this all started was like, you're from New York.
I am.
Like, I can talk to you about pizza.
I know. I don't like Saturday. My friend, I was like, look, I just want pizza. I've wanted pizza all week. We need to get pizza Saturday night. And she was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll get pizza. And I was like, do you want me to go around here? Because she lives in Farmington. So I'm like, I'll pick something up here. And she was like, she's like, oh, we'll figure it out. And then sure enough, I was working and I kind of forgot about it. And then she's like, oh, we're ordering from Farmington House of Pizza. What do you want? And I was like, fuck.
Damn it. I said
pizza.
This
is not what I want. This is not pizza. I mean, I was starving when I ate it, so it was sufficient. But it just is like, ugh.
Yeah,
they don't get it.
They don't get it. They don't get it. And the thing is, like, I will totally eat and enjoy terrible, terrible pizza.
Yeah.
But I'm also still a snob about
it. Right. Yeah, no, I'll do it. I'm not going to, like, refuse a slice of pizza. Let's be real.
You think I'm insane?
Yeah. Who do you think I am? But, like, I just don't understand why pizza sucks so bad up here.
I think they don't know the difference. Like they,
but there's like
they,
that weird thick one. Like there's that's very common. Is that it's like thick.
Yeah.
And it's just not good. There's never enough cheese. There's never enough sauce. It's just like greasy. Which there's nothing wrong with greasy pizza, but like I don't know, flavorless like, and greasy. Is,
how do you get it so that this was never good?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
it's sauce, bread, and cheese.
Yeah.
I don't see what's so hard about it.
I don't know. I don't know. And I also like it makes me appreciate like wow, how did they get it so right in New York, and like what could really be so different? And like I've heard stuff about like oh, it's the water. You know, I don't know.
I feel like New York's water is shittier.
Maybe.
Like, definitely feel that way. I don't know. Rawlingsford's a little weird. Their water's a little weird. But
yeah. At North Country, they have like a, there's like the sink and then there's like the filtered water tap. And they were like, this is just like regular Rawlingsford water. And I was like, well, what's wrong with it? And they were like, yeah, just don't.
Yeah, no, it's weird. It's weird. I have like a Brita in my fridge that I fill up. And every once in a while, I'll be lazy and I don't want to fill it up. So I'll be like, oh, I'll just have some tap. And then I'm like, oh my God, this is why I don't have tap.
Now I remember.
Oh, it's terrible. It's the weirdest tasting stuff. And they've had like a budget increase for their water supply. Like in the past like few years, it's gotten better. So I don't know what it used to be
Jeez.
Like. Yeah.
Weird. I wonder, I mean, who knows where like water supplies come from, but like,
I don't think I want to know I'd rather I'll just do my Brita and move on.
Like. I mean, so this house is like right near the Bellamy Reservoir, which is supplies the drinking water for Portsmouth. So you're not allowed to swim in it, but you are allowed to boat in it. So we like bought the like motorless boats.
Oh, gotcha.
So like we bought the like cheapest kayaks we could find, and now we've been kayaking in it, and it's the best.
Kayaking is so much fun.
It's so much fun.
I just went for the first time a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think my first time was like a year or two ago, and then we've been talking about getting them ever since. And then we finally just did, and it's so fun. But I was also just like, I'm totally like kayaking in people's drinking water.
Yeah, they're gonna drink that.
Yeah. I mean, they do stuff to it, but still, it's so weird.
I get boats don't have like secretions and stuff, yeah. But like, it's still strange to me that you, like, wouldn't you just want people to stay away from it in general?
Yeah, totally.
Is it beautiful though? Is it like,
it's awesome. It's like, well, it was like kind of torture to like have this beautiful lake or pond right there that we couldn't go in.
Right.
And just like, oh man, we can just like walk up to the edge to it and like look at it,
yeah.
You know, but then getting boats, it's like, okay, we can actually like be on it, like surrounded by it, even if you can't go swimming.
Right.
But it would be such a good swimming hole if we were allowed to swim in it.
I've never been. There's like a place, I think it's Milton. Because again, my friend that lives in Farmington is the one that bought kayaks this summer and was like, you should do it. And I was like, all right. And then it was just awesome. It's just so cool. It's like a good workout, but like I also don't feel like I'm really like exercising. It's more relaxing. Like it's just awesome. But yeah, there's a place in Milton that's like, it's so cute. It's just like a small little pond.
Nice.
But we have so many really like pristine places to kayak and do water activities. I don't know why. I've been here 12 years and this year I'm like, oh, I guess I'll do some outdoor stuff. Like, I'm like, what have I been doing with my life the last 12 years?
Well, what have you been?
I don't even know. I feel like I do nothing, but then like when I like start a conversation or I talk to people, I'm like, oh, I guess I have done.
I guess I've been busy.
A lot of things. Right now, I feel like I'm not doing anything because I'm not working full time. So I feel so lazy, even though I have no free time.
Yeah.
Somehow, I just feel so lazy. But I don't know. Well, when I moved here, I was in high school. So it was like, I don't know. I was like, you know, more concerned about who
did
I was
your family
next
move
to.
Up here altogether?
Yeah. Well, my dad worked in Manhattan and he got transferred after he was in the Twin Towers. And then after that, he went to Princeton, New Jersey, and then they were like, okay, we're transferring you. This is the last time, but you have a choice between Texas and New Hampshire.
Wow.
Or Massachusetts, because you worked in Boston. And I was just like, please don't move me to Texas.
Yeah.
Like, I will do anything.
Where in Texas do you
I don't even know. I don't remember. But Texas as a whole, like, yeah. I'm just all set. I don't like warm weather. Like, I don't like the South. I just, there's nothing about it that I was drawn to. So luckily, he had an option and he ended up moving. But he moved before us. He actually moved like a year before we did. And my dad would drive home to New Jersey every weekend.
Wow.
And then drive back up to Quincy was where he was staying.
Wow.
So yeah, but it was my mom, my dad, and my brother and I. But all my family lives in New York and New Jersey.
So like, quick touchback. He was in the Twin Towers on 9/11. And
yeah.
Like, what was that like for you to like, to witness that so personally?
Well, I was 11. And I was in sixth grade and I went to school in New Jersey. So I was in school that day.
Yeah.
And my school went into lockdown, and like when you're 11, like lockdown's kind of cool and you're like, what? And like, you don't have class and it's like exciting, even though you're like, I might die, but like, it's still, I don't know. It's just
like,
so fun.
It's like
when
a fire drill and like, oh, like, it's annoying, but it's also like, hey, at least we're not in class.
Yeah, you know? Well, that's it. You're 11. Like, you're not like, oh, something obviously bad is happening in the world. Yeah, exactly. So, honestly, most of the day was pretty stress-free. But then it got, like, a little weird because we got out of school early and there was, like, a SWAT team there that, like, escorted us to our buses. And you could see the smoke from the Twin Towers in New Jersey. And we lived, like, not super southern, but like more so southern than like central New Jersey. So it was crazy. And I mean, that was weird, but again, we didn't know what happened. And then when I got home, my mom was sitting in the living room with it on the TV, but I didn't really understand the impact at that age. Like, I had always gone to Manhattan. New York was like a very, like, you know, friendly place to me and like it's just a staple of my childhood, so I just was like, oh yeah, these are things, and like, oh yeah, buildings fall. But my mom didn't actually say anything to me. I didn't know until like she didn't contact him for like 3 days. He was lucky because he like got out really fast, and he was ended up being like a few blocks away, and my uncle lived in Manhattan at the time, so he just went to his house. But like, power was down. It was it was a crazy day in New York.
So were your parents together?
Yeah.
And she couldn't reach him for days?
Yeah, for 3 days. And
so she didn't know if he was okay or not.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. But like, my mom is a badass. She's like the strongest lady in the world. And she didn't even like I didn't even know. I mean, I was 11. Like, I wasn't dumb. Like, I could pick up on emotions and things like that. But she just like didn't even let on that there was something wrong. I mean, I thought it was a little weird that like my dad didn't come home for 3 days. But, you know, she was just like, I don't even know what she said. I don't have that much of a memory of what she did, but I just don't. It wasn't super negative for me personally, but I do remember going back to school the next day and like there not being kids in class. And we had a little bit of a conversation about it. But if anything, I look back on it and I was like, we all knew there was something really wrong and that something bad happened. And like, they were just like very hush hush about it and very like, oh, they're children, don't break their innocence. And it was really frustrating actually because we're like,
I want to know what's
going
on.
We're not six. Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
When you're 11, you're kind of old enough to have like feelings and like be pissed at somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, yeah. I mean, I remember I was in college at the time. So, and I was like, just like, I don't know how far reaching this is. So I'm like trying to reach my family's on Long Island, and like, my grandma lived in the city and I have friends at NYU and stuff like that. So I'm like trying to reach them and you can't get through to anybody.
Right.
Like the phone lines are down. Right. A lot of the power was down. Like cell phones were not nearly as prevalent, but I don't think those were working either.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I think that people sometimes forget about just the, like the wondering of it all. And there was a lot of like, we don't know yet, like why this happened, how this happened, like who's safe, who's not safe. Like it was kind of like, what floor did they work on kind of a thing. And also it's like easy to forget now that it's been 16 years of this, like how surprising it was. Like there wasn't the context of like SWAT teams. Like now you like go to Times Square and the NYPD looks like the military.
Right.
You know, they're in like armored tanks and like have like huge machine guns.
Yeah.
That wasn't like that
no,
before.
It wasn't.
You know? And
it wasn't.
It's just like the idea of an attack was completely something that none of there was no emotional context for it before. So just the like confusion of that time, like what do you mean? Yeah, I remember my girlfriend at the time, my like first girlfriend ever, was sending me messages on Instant Messenger.
Yes.
And she said the Twin Towers fell down. And I was like, both of them? Like you have to be wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like or someone flew a plane into the Twin Towers and I was like, both of them? And just like indignant that like that's impossible.
Right.
You know? And then going and seeing the TV and just like, oh, holy shit.
I think it was more for me, like it seemed more like, oh, it was obviously an accident. Yeah. Like somebody fell asleep while piloting a plane.
It is a really tall building. I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet.
It seems unlikely, but there's always statistically a chance of things happening. But yeah, I mean, and I remember not for us too, but I mean the racism that started after that. It was, I mean, I never, for me, actually, that was like a pivotal point in my life where, like anti-Muslim and anti-Islam started becoming a thing.
It was really
uncomfortable to be around. To this day, unfortunately, it's still on the rise, but I like that wasn't a thing in my life.
No.
And living in, you know, New York and New Jersey, it is diverse there. It's not like New Hampshire where it's like 99.8% white.
Yeah.
And I had friends who, you know, Even friends that are black and people assume Muslims and it's like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
Like that's, I think, the most impact that it had on my life was it was hard with my dad. And I knew my dad had friends that had passed away and he had seen some horrible things that he'd never talked about. My uncle actually had a meeting on one of the top floors and it was the first day he ever woke up late for work.
Wow.
So he just didn't end up going, which is insane. And I'm also like, knowing my uncle, I'm like, really? You never been late for work? Like, he's like, he's awesome now, but when he was like, you know, 16 years ago, he was like always sleeping till like 2 and being super irresponsible. Yeah. So I find that hard to believe, but he still to this day claims that it was the only time that he ever woke up late for work, which is insane. But yeah, I mean, it was pivotal for our country. And
totally.
It's weird that I was like, even though I was so young, it's weird that I was like that close to it.
Totally.
I kind of forget sometimes, like being up here, it's not something that we really talk about a lot, but.
Yeah. Well, that's like was such an interesting dynamic of it to me was that it immediately turned into this like flag waving thing. Like this was an attack on America.
It's like excessive patriotism. Yes.
Yeah. But also like, do you identify with New York that strongly? Like, this was an attack on a building in New York, you know? And then, like, I don't know, just the, like, the disconnect of the, like, super personal and then the, like, sort of, like, city. And like, it affected people from all over, like, the metropolitan area because, like, firefighters came from everywhere. And, like,
I know.
Like, it really, like, affected tons and tons of people. But then also the like whole national tone and conversation changed. But it's like important, I guess, to like think back to then and be like, oh yeah, like the whole idea of like Islamophobia, like I'm sure it existed to some degree, but it wasn't. It just, there was no reason for it. Yeah. Before that, you know,
you could be like, I just don't like Muslims, but you didn't have a reason, I guess.
And that never
Not
came.
Not that this is a reason to
no,
me,
no.
But I mean, I've seen it in even this whole Trump phenomenon. Like so my family's very, very Jewish.
Yeah.
And Jews usually tend to be on the liberal side, which I'm thankful for. But my grandmother recently bought a house in Florida. So she's a snowbird and goes down there in the winter. And sometimes I visit her. And last year I went to visit her and she had like somehow, I don't know why she like went to Florida, you know, to like escape.
Yeah.
But like they all moved together. So all her friends live in like the same community in Florida. And I was just hanging out with them. And, you know, these are all Jews from New York who worked in Manhattan for like, you know, 5 decades or something. And they are like riding the Trump train and are like all about anti-Muslim agenda. And it's crazy. Like I talked to one of my grandmother's friends and she was like, I was there that day. I was there on 9/11 and there wasn't a single taxi at all. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like the entire city, which is like a broad statement. Cause like, you can't see the entire city from where you are, right. But that's fine. And she was like, was empty. And I'm telling you that they all knew and they were all apart and just they. Just like, I mean, I literally didn't even say anything cause there's nothing I could say to this like 75-year-old woman that's going to change her mind. Yeah. And she knows where I stand, but it's like,
do you think people say that about Jews too? Right. That like the Jews knew not to go in that day.
Oh, I know.
It's crazy. It's all crazy, no matter who they say it about.
This is a Jew saying that to me, and I'm going to be like, do you know what people are saying about you? And it's like, and I also don't understand, like, how you could be part of a minority and then also target another minority. Like, don't you know what it's like to be, like, ostracized because of a belief or your gender or your race or whatever? Like,
it's all so complicated and confusing because there's also the, like, the sort of like pro-Israel Jew who's like has like anti-Islam feelings from that.
Right.
And like, I don't know. And then this just like whole like weird fluctuating notion of whiteness where like, are you or aren't you a minority? And how does that change over time? And like, when do you get to be in the like in-group or the out-group, you know? And it's just like, it's all just made up. It's all just this imaginary sense of like, arbitrary. Oh, don't worry. Yeah. Like you can pass, you know? and like, I just hate how easily we're turned against each other over these just like imaginary concepts.
Yep.
You know? Cause like we were just like doing a bunch of traveling and it's like, and it got me thinking about like racism and whiteness and like realizing how specifically American a lot of our racial attitudes are, you know, like it is a specific aspect of the American identity that there's racism against non-white people,
right?
You know, and whiteness as a concept, because if you are like Italian American or Irish American or German American, like you're white, but go to Italy and tell an Italian that they're the same as a German. I'd be like, fuck you.
Right.
Like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. I'm Italian. Yeah.
And just to like that white is somehow an ethnicity. It's not. It's just like a made up construct to force other people out.
Yeah. No, it is for real. That's exactly what it is. I mean, people always, you know, I always considered Judaism to be a nationality. A lot of people do consider it in that sense. I am an atheist. So I don't practice anymore, but I did for a long time and I still like, I'm Jewish. Like when people ask, like, I'm Jewish. No, I don't believe in God and the Torah is ridiculous, but like I'm Jewish. Like it's in my blood.
Culturally
I am a Jew.
Jewish,
and exactly. And, you know, but like, what does that mean?
And then, and then that means different things too, where like, the sort of like culture of the New York Jew is its own culture.
It's so true.
And has nothing to do with the culture of an Israeli Jew.
Right.
You know?
Or like, really even the religion itself.
Right.
Like,
yeah, nothing
it's
to
more
do
just
with
like characteristics and personality
totally
traits. Like
yeah. And I mean like when we were in Australia of all places, and we were like when we were on this trip, we left like right after Trump was inaugurated, and we were kind of like, how's this going to come up in our interactions with other people about being an American?
Oh, I would be something I genuinely would be nervous about.
Yeah. And it didn't come up nearly as much as we feared it would.
Well, that's good.
And maybe just because people are more polite or something like that, or they just, we're full of ourselves and they don't care, you know? But like, so Anne, my wife, was in this shop in Melbourne and it came up that she was American and the shop owner was like, oh, you're so lucky. Like, I wish we had leaders like that here. And she was like, what? And she goes, well, I'm Jewish and he's very good for the Jews. And she was like, I don't think that that's true. Like the Jewish people I know are not pumped about it. And it turns out that she was Israeli and was very pumped. And it was just like, that's a whole different kind of Jew.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
In terms
we
of
don't
like,
have a huge Israeli Jew population.
No.
It's not really something.
And their culture is
very
like,
different.
Very different and in a very different like political place.
Yes.
And a very different attitude towards, you know, that whole insider outsider thing. And it's just like, that's so different from the like liberal New York Jew.
Right, right,
you know?
Right. It's actually kind of crazy. I always kind of forget that. Because even when I went to synagogue, we used to have, I think it was called a shlimcha, is the name of like a teacher that would come over from Israel and would like teach. You'd have like an hour every time you had a Hebrew school where you'd work with her or him. We had a boy once, but usually it's a woman. And it was very interesting because it's interesting both ways because they're there to teach you, but they end up learning so much because I think they have such an idea of what the United States is going to be like. And then they get here and they're like, oh, okay. But talking politics was like actually something that we usually weren't even allowed to talk about with them. Because we knew it wasn't going to go down the path that we wanted it to, but, or just didn't want to cause any kind of like schism or anything like that. But
well, it
it's
also,
crazy.
I also feel like kind of situations like that kind of show you how almost like how much of like political beliefs just like rile up this like really negative interactions in people and like, that just left to like here group of random arbitrary people, like hang out with each other. Like you're gonna pretty much get along.
Mm-hmm.
Like even like regardless of your differences and like, you know, just put a bunch of people in like a diner or something, like you're gonna get along or at least coexist peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in the little wrinkles of like I hate how much it's like sports where it's like, oh, you're an Eagles fan?
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Like
you know
fanaticism,
what I mean?
Yeah. Which I'm never into sports. I'm not athletic. I did just start doing CrossFit 2 months ago, which
nice.
I really enjoy. But like, I'm competitive and like intellectual, you know, in intellectual stance. But when it comes to like athleticism, I'm like, meh. But fanaticism is so like, I look at the dynamic between the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Yeah.
We're Mets fans. It's like almost like a lineage. Like you're just born into being this this fan of this team that sucks. And but like you just like grin and bear it. You're like, all right, whatever. I'm miserable, but I guess I'll do it. But it's crazy, you know, going to a Red Sox game. I mean, they hate.
Yeah.
Like if I were ever like, I'm from New York, and they're like, are you a Yankees fan? And I'm like, what about everything else in my life? Like, you just write me off immediately because I might like this team of people who don't care about you. They could care less about you.
Yeah, they don't know you exist.
Right? They don't care. They're making so much money and they play, like, what, half the year and then they move on with their lives? Like, it's so strange, but it is. It's just like that.
Totally. And I'm a Mets fan too, and I still have some like feelings about Boston, and I'm like, where the hell did these come from?
Me too. I have a lot of negative feelings about Boston, and I'm just like, is it because I'm from New York? Like,
I literally,
like, what's wrong with
like
Boston?
Especially going to Boston for like when I first moved up here and going to Boston because it's like the nearest city, and I literally get there and I'm like, ugh, you call this a city? You
know? I'm like, this is nothing compared to New York. And I like Boston. I enjoy going to Boston. I think it's way more historical. I mean, obviously New York has so much history, but like, Boston like really prides itself on its history.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool. I like learning about it, but I always had these negative feelings that were just like, obviously like these subconscious feelings that my parents instilled in me that they never even been to Boston until
well,
we moved
the
up
thing,
here.
Is
but it's
like,
crazy.
Where does it, wherever it comes from, it's in there somewhere.
It's in there.
You
it
know,
is.
Cause like your parents didn't know my parents, but, and like, I don't remember my parents ever saying anything
me
bad
either.
About Boston, but I got there and just like, ugh.
Yeah. I'm like, this is disgusting. And I'm like, why would you even think that? And Boston's way cleaner than New York. Like, what?
I went when, I think it was like shortly after college, I went to Boston on New Year's Eve one year. And the subway stopped running at midnight. And I think that was the first time that I was like,
I agree with you there.
How dare you stop running the subways at midnight on New Year's Eve?
Yeah.
Like,
or
what's
ever.
Wrong with you?
Like, come on.
Or
this
ever.
Is a city.
Yeah.
Like,
And that's, I think, when the idea of, like, you call yourself a city came in. And, yeah. And it just, it's unshakable for me.
No, it's so true. It's, but again, it's weird.
Yeah.
And politics is, that is what it is. And it's become so extreme. And, like, you know, I ran for office this past election. So I was, like, really immersed in politics for, like, a solid year. And honestly, I've come out of it, like, bitter.
Yeah.
And it's hard not to, because I see, like, I am a very empathetic person, which is why politics probably isn't my future. because I, like, can't, like, I just, I see people and I naturally, I want to know about them and I want to be friends with them and I want to find common ground and similarities and, like, put differences aside. But also to talk about those differences, because I love a healthy debate.
Yeah.
But I don't want to argue. Like,
right.
And that's all people want to do now. It's just everything's black and white and it's on both sides. I've seen it. It's terrible.
Totally.
And I'm so done with it. I'm like, this is, it's exhausting. And it just, our country is, like, so divided right now.
I know.
And within both parties.
Totally.
And it's just, everything's a mess. And I'm like, what is going on?
My liberal Jew uncle at Thanksgiving dinner was, like, printing out his favorite anti-Trump memes and passing them around the Thanksgiving table. And I was like, I don't want anything to do with this. Even though I, like, I agree with you.
Even though it's funny.
But,
and yuck, like, but it's, like, also, like, this is a whole nother step.
It's, yeah.
Like, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. So I want to hear about your experience running for office and, like, your decision to do it and the before, during, and after of it all.
Yeah. So it all started with Planned Parenthood. So I started volunteering about 2.5 years ago, with Planned Parenthood. I actually lived in Manchester when I started volunteering. That's a whole nother reason as to why I started volunteering. We can get into that later, but,
okay.
It's a long story, but, you know, basically I had surgery and I wasn't working and I was like, I had a women's health, chronic illness that I was just diagnosed with. And I was like, I need to do something productive with my time and blah, blah, blah. So I started volunteering for Planned Parenthood. I wasn't really that politically involved. I never really labeled myself. I barely even understood, really. It's terrible. I wouldn't say barely understood. I knew what a Democrat or Republican was, but I didn't get it.
Yeah.
But once I started becoming more up to date with the legislature, which is something we follow so closely with what I do at Planned Parenthood, naturally I just kind of became obsessed and was just following everything and then started becoming super educated about New Hampshire's government, which is very unique.
How so?
So New Hampshire's House of Representatives is the third largest governing body in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
We have 400 state reps. No other state or country apparently has anything that
Why
is that
is
large.
That?
I still don't know. I've tried so hard to find out this answer and nobody knows the answer.
Is
I don't
it like
know
every
why.
Every town has a rep or something like that?
Not even that. It's based off of population, but it's also with all the gerrymandering that's been done in the past however many decades, it's just kind of a mess. I mean, Rawlingsford technically has 4 reps that represent Rawlingsford. And Rawlingsford is, again, 7 square miles. I don't know our exact population, but we're not huge.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people can live in 7 square miles when you have, you know, everyone has, 100 acres of property? You know, so, but yeah, so, the districts are, I mean, it's just, it's, New Hampshire is so hard to understand. And when you talk to other people from other states, they're like, I don't get it. And I'm I don't either.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have so many reps and we don't have term limits. So there's a lot of people
career
that have been in there.
Yes.
Too. For a long time. And mostly they're, you know, retired people who are older because we have so many state reps, the salary is $100 a year. Before taxes. After taxes, it's $80 a year.
Right.
And you're working 6 months out of the year. I wouldn't quite say full-time, but, I mean, you're working, up to three days a week. I mean, it's hard to supplement.
Right.
So all that being said, I was very interested, and I had been thinking about it kind of subconsciously, and then I met Andrew Valensky, who actually is our executive counselor now, but he was going to be running for executive counselor. He's an educational lawyer in Manchester, and he's awesome. He was Bernie's lawyer in New Hampshire. He got him on the ballot here. And through Planned Parenthood, he had asked for one of their volunteers to help him with this promotional video he was doing. And they asked me because I'm always the first one to jump on. I love public speaking and I love all that stuff. So I was like, oh yeah, sure. So I went to Manchester and I met him and we ended up talking and he was like, have you thought about running? And I'm like, I guess I have, but like, not really. And he was like, you should really do it. And I was like, I don't know. It's this and that and this and that. And he's like, yeah, you should do it. And I was like, okay.
So what office did you run for?
I ran for state representative. So Rawlingsford, Stratford County, District 19, 18? I don't even remember now. I've obviously, like, repressed all memories from running for office. But so we had 3 seats, and there were 6 of us running for 3 seats. 3 Democrats, 3 Republicans. The incumbents were Democrats. But yeah, so I started, I feel like those are pretty much your options, like state rep and then their Senate. We have a great Senator, David Waters. I don't see him going anywhere anytime soon and I would never run against him. But yeah, so I ran, I was like, I think if I was in the House, like I can make a big difference, especially because I've seen a lot of anti, women's health legislation in the past. Granted, we've done a really good job at like keeping that at bay, but I'm like, I'd like this to just not be a thing every year. So I really wanted to sit on the Health and Human Services committee. They have all these committees.
Yeah.
You get signed to a committee once you win and all that. But yeah, so I don't remember when I did that video. It was like, I want to say like, actually it was early. It was like February of 2016. And it's so easy. All you do is you literally go to like the first week of June is when you can like apply. And I just went to town hall and I signed a piece of paper and they're like, okay, you're on the ballot. And then I was introduced to David Waters and him and I did a lot of work together. He like kind of mentored me and I started campaigning and fundraising and social media presence, which is like my least favorite part of politics nowadays. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Everybody definitely made it seem like it was this really easy thing to do. It's not. It was a lot more work than I had intended on. Not to mention, my dad passed away during my campaign and I got married.
Wow.
It was intense. But I followed through with it and I ended up losing, but I only lost by 70 votes.
Wow.
And this is out of thousands of votes.
Yeah.
And I lost to the former mayor of Somersworth, which Somersworth was part of my district. So wow. I felt pretty shitty the night of the election, but like looking back on it, like first time running, no name recognition, never involved in politics, except maybe like some of my activism in the state house and stuff through Planned Parenthood, but like nobody knew who I was. So right. to lose by that little was actually to me a win in some sense. And now I'm kind of glad I didn't win because it's a mess. Even in our house. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are in the house now and we talk all the time and things are just not ideal and it's hard for first timers. Is that just
because of the polarization of it?
That and like, it's not even, you know, I thought for a long time, like, oh, it's this election. It's this whole like Trump versus Hillary, left versus right. You know, the extremes on both sides. Yeah. You have these extreme liberals and the extreme conservatives and everybody just wants to hate each other. The house is like that, but it's like very clicky. It felt a lot like high school to me where you have like these people because they've been in there for like 20 years. So they know everything. And both the Republicans and the Democrats did this where it's like, they're just like this group and like, you're the new person. Like you just got here to this high school. Like, do you even go here? Like that's how it felt. And I was like, okay, like we're on the same side, but there's a lot of traditional Democrats in our house that are like kind of stuck in 20 years ago. Huh. And like, you know, I would issues like the legalization of marijuana. I mean, I went to a caucus and we were all talking about it and you know, there are a lot of issues I feel passionately about. That's one of them. I just think it's time to do it. And, there are people, there are Democrats and Republicans that are staunchly against it. against it. There are Democrats and Republicans that are like staunchly for it, but it's like, it's not even a partisan issue. It's just like these like old school ideals, and they're not very welcoming to like young blood, I guess. It's,
right.
It's to the, which I think, cause I would tell them all the time, I think people would get offended because they'd be like, oh, what are you saying? Like the elderly don't matter and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, no, like not at all. It's just, I think fresh set of eyes on anything is always important, but you want to also keep like the wisdom and the experience there. We just need like a healthy balance. And they're just like, no. And I'm like, okay. Like, and there's not much I can do. I didn't have a lot of leeway.
Right.
And yeah, the average age in the house is 65 years old.
Wow. Well, and yeah, if it pays you hardly anything but does require a lot of time and work, then that kind of incentivizes people who are retired and well-to-do.
Of course.
You know, because like how else are you supposed to do it?
You can't. Know? I mean, I was fortunate enough because my husband is in the military and he's like made himself a career and he makes enough money to support us. Granted, we weren't really we wouldn't be saving money. Like, you know, I'm 27, he's 29. Like we're at an age where we want to be saving for our future and investing and this and that. And, you know, we were willing to sacrifice and put things on hold so that I could do this. Cause I just felt like I really do love New Hampshire a lot. And I just felt like this is time to give back and to like, hopefully make a difference. And I wasn't even thinking like, oh, I'll build a career off of this or anything like that.
No.
I was just like, I think I, you know, I'm just so passionate about things and I would just love to like share that with like the house and like speak for people. And it just, unfortunately, I think once you're like wrapped up in it and when you've been doing it for so long, I think people lose sense of that. And it just becomes like, what's my next move? When's my next race? When's the,
and it's how do I win? Ugh.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because, I think it just does a disservice to the state and, and we're not getting as much done as I think we could be.
Yeah. And I mean, and then there's the whole news sources thing where it's like, well, it's like, how do you bring people together if you literally can't agree on anything because you're getting different information.
Right.
Like my set of understanding of like my understanding of the world around me is fundamentally different from your understanding of the world around you because we're both being told that the other is getting bad info.
I know.
You know, and it's just like shit. You know, like I forget the name of the guy who the like wealthy financier who happens to be Jewish, who the Republicans say is like pulling the strings on the Democratic side. I forget his name, but then it's like, well, wait, we have the Koch brothers. Like are they our boogeyman and they have their boogeyman and we all are just like, or are they both true? Or are they both false? Like, I guess that the Trump election and the whole like idea of the liberal bubble, it definitely got me thinking about like, what are the things that I believe that are in fact not true?
Yeah.
But the problem is, I don't think that anyone is doing that on that side.
No, you know, no, it's not reciprocated.
Yeah. And it's like, wait a minute. Like you just lost the popular vote by 3 million votes. Like, and now someone who way fewer people voted for is in charge. Like, why isn't it up to them to give any consideration to all those voiceless people who are like really bummed about the direction that the country's going in?
I know.
You know? Because
I know.
They're in power.
I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I was actually listening to NPR yesterday and there was like a whole segment about the news and reporting and fake news and all that stuff. And it was really cool because I firmly believe that NPR is a little left-leaning. My husband's like, no, they're not. They're neutral. Yeah. I do think they are left-leaning. But there are times where they do have, like, you know, excellent reporting and they can try and get both sides and whatever. But yesterday was one of those times and they were talking about, like, how do you navigate the news? And, like, you know, how does it affect politics and how does it affect how you think? And, like, how does it just perpetuate what you already believe? You know, confirmation bias and all that stuff. And it was really cool hearing from people, you know, people from, you know, Republicans and Democrats who were like, you know, it'd be really cool if we could like kind of get rid of the like animosity and like just talk about, you know, maybe just talk about policy. Like, we, like, you know, people don't, I don't like Trump. I sincerely dislike Trump, and I don't agree with a lot of things that he says and that he does. And him as a person, it's so difficult for me to even listen to anything he says because of his demeanor and the way he acts.
Right.
However, I can't lie that, like, that does bias me. And I'm not sitting there, like, reading over his policy, picking out the pros and the cons because I don't like him.
Yeah.
But that does impact how I perceive news. And when I see something that's anti-Trump, I immediately am drawn to it. But if I saw something pro-Trump, I honestly probably wouldn't read it because I don't know where these sources are coming from, and I don't know if they're accurate.
Well, and the other thing is that, like, it's so unfortunate that, like, to criticize Trump makes you biased against him, but it's like, well, no, like, an unbiased news source still has to have the ability to call something ridiculous if it's ridiculous.
Yes.
You know, or to, like, critique the things about it that are eminently critiquable. Like, that's not bias. That's facts. You know what I mean?
That's their job. My job as a human being, I don't have hardly a job, but I mean, naturally we can be biased. It's just an error, a flaw in the humans. But I think that news stations are capable of being neutral. I don't think they are. And I think it's because of money and ratings and the competition now with the internet and all this other, I mean, you have to stand out and you have to do what you have to do, I guess.
Yeah, well, and with the internet, like, I don't know if internet sites are even subject to, like, FCC regulations or anything like that. They're just like, we can say whatever we want. And to be honest, I don't know if, like, I guess Fox News kind of proved that, like, the news doesn't have to meet, like, journalistic standards.
Oh, no.
Which are, like, there's no, like, journalistic governing body that says, like, you can say that or you can't say that. It was just sort of this, like, ethical, agreed-upon thing that, like, the news has to be reliable.
Right.
You know? And then they just, like, appeared and were like, actually, the news is a TV show. And, like, we can find an audience and sell to that audience. And ever since then, it's just like, oh, the news is a TV show.
It is.
And, like,
it's not news.
Right. Well, and it's like, but then where do we get it from? How do we actually learn? And, like, how scary is it that the, like, legitimate news sources now have to, like, remind us or, like, convince us of why they're legitimate? And it's like, oh, well, the New York Times. Like, the New York Times is a legitimate news source. I believe what I read there. And then you, like, see some total bullshit. And you're like, well, never mind. I don't know. I don't know. You know,
it's, I would say I like, I'm trying very hard to be open-minded but it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's exhausting to constantly, I mean, especially even with Facebook. I mean, I have hundreds of friends on Facebook. They're always posting things. Everyone's posting articles. I have a lot of left-leaning friends on Facebook, and I enjoy reading it. I find out, actually, I mean, when something big happens, all you have to do is log on to Facebook. You'll read all about it.
Totally.
But every time I read something, I'm like, can I cite this? I mean, for me, when I say something to somebody, I don't care what it is, unless it's an opinion. But if I'm trying to state a fact, I want to be able to be like, here is where you can go. Yeah. I mean, I went to college, and I feel like that's, like, shoved down your throat is, like, cite your sources. Like, and I just feel like I'm uncomfortable saying things when I don't have a substantial amount of evidence to back me up. But nowadays I'm like, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if anything is reliable.
I will say that I have gotten a lot more, diligent about fact checking.
Yeah.
You know, or even just sort of, like, reading multiple sources or being like, who published this?
Right.
You know, because, like, people still share stuff on Facebook all the time. They just, like, see a headline and they're like, share.
Yeah, they didn't even read it.
And then my sort of favorite comeback to that is, like, yeah, I always get all my most trusted information from, like, news.internet.au, you know?
Right?
And it's just like, this is where I turn to for facts.
Or, like,
you know?
BuzzFeed. I know. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
I mean,
or Wikipedia.
It's
you might as well Wikipedia.
Yeah, stuff that I used to sort of, like, read and believe, and I'm just like, no. And that includes stuff that is to the left, which is where my political leanings lie, like Huffington Post. Like, I will not read the Huffington Post anymore because I'm just like, this is nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, this is our version of nonsense, because they'll be like, oh, really? You think you can say that? You know, and it's just so like antagonistic and gossipy where it's like, mm-mm, like, I'm not going to get on board with it on our side either.
Right. No, you can't. I mean, I even WMUR, NH1, I mean, some of the things that they post that they consider news is not news. And some of the things that they post, I mean, I remember I was just like, yeah, WMUR, that's fine. Like, that's our, like, New Hampshire station. They should be reporting accurate stuff. And then I had a friend who was in a really abusive relationship, and they had gotten in an argument, and it got physical, and the police were called, and, you know, very typical domestic violence situation. And they had played Monopoly earlier that day, like hours and hours before the situation even happened. The title of the article was Girlfriend Punches Boyfriend in the Face Over Monopoly Game. And it's like, I mean, I couldn't believe how distorted this article was, and took a very serious situation that was actually, she was such a victim in the situation, and they completely turned it around and made her seem like a perpetrator. And to the point where, like, she was bullied online. People were, they put her name and her picture in the article. People were messaging her on Facebook that she didn't know, and like threatening her. I mean, it was so bad. And I was a crisis advocate for 2 years. So I, you know, was an advocate for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And I it's like, I think I see everything. And then I'm like, and I commented, I was like crazy, because I was like, I was pissed. And I commented on WMR. I wrote them all this stuff. They deleted all my comments. They never responded back to me. I mean, it was insane. And I'm like, this is because of ratings. They just want people to read it. And it's just like, I just actually couldn't believe that. And that was a couple of years ago. And ever since then, I'm like, maybe I'll look at the weather forecast from them.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I have a huge issue with the Portsmouth Herald. Like, Seacoast Online, garbage. Like, I'll see a headline sometimes, and I'll just, like, the only reason I'll click on it is to be like, I just want to confirm my assumption that Elizabeth Dinan wrote this post, because she is just like, I call her Bad News Dinan. I've never met her. I don't know what she looks like. There are no images of her online.
Oh, interesting.
She's like intentionally like anonymous. Yeah. But she only writes bad news. And she definitely has this reputation with a lot of people of like, one of the most recent examples was, I guess, a man wrote a book who used to be like homeless and a drug addict. And the book is about his like journey of recovery, and like, wow, how amazing and inspirational is that, that this person was in such a low place and they were able to crawl out of it and then document it and write a book about it. And the headline was like, hobo writes book, or something like that. You know, it was just like so demeaning and insulting. And it was just like, oh, guaranteed Elizabeth Dinan. And I clicked on it and there she was, you know?
Oh my God.
And it's just like, why are you such an asshole about this? You know what I mean?
I don't
get
it.
And it's like, why does it draw better ratings to demean somebody? You know?
I think that curiosity, like, I think it's human nature. So I was a psych major, and it's a nonsense degree, honestly, but it, I was always fascinated by psychology. I love it. I love mental wellness. I love mental illness. I mean, I could talk about it all day long.
Yeah.
And but I do love researching. I love looking at studies and things like that. And there is a study that basically says that like humans are just, they're more drawn to negativity than they are positivity. And
it's so sad.
I mean, look at a car accident. I mean, people. I'm guilty of it. Every time I see one, I'm like, yeah. And then you like get up to it. You want to see it. You want to see what happens.
Be
like, yeah, it's not, it's weird. I'm aware of what I'm doing. And it's like, you can't help it. We feed off of negativity, And this, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's, like, a distancing thing. I don't know if it's, like, the internet's fault. There's so many things that I have theories about, like, why we're like this or why it's getting worse, because I do think it's getting worse. But just this lack of empathy, this lack of sympathizing, this lack of being a human being and, like, recognizing other people as having, like, emotionals and being alive, like, that's what it is. It's, like, you know, you read this article, and I do think in a way the internet like desensitizes us, because it's just so much crap is coming out, and it's the internet. It's not like a tangible thing. You can't, like, if I was sitting down talking to somebody, like in that article, it's so different than just like blindly reading something that somebody else wrote that you have no idea what's going on.
And what no one ever writes on the internet, or like, I don't know, in general anymore these days, is on the other hand. You know what I mean? Like, this is a complicated story with many sides to it. Let's try and better understand it. It's just like, you won't believe what happened. Click here to find out, you know? And it's just, but everything is that,
you know,
like some of it is literally just like, you won't believe what so-and-so looks like. And then it's just a normal picture, you know, like that's just,
I know.
Or like,
I do it all the time.
I do
you
it
know how many times I do it? I'm like,
time.
Oh, I can't wait. And then I'm like, ah,
and then
it again.
Like your phone freezes or whatever, you know what I mean?
But you just have a virus now.
Yeah. But even just like the regular news, and it's just like, oh wow. Like shit. Like what if we're not cut out for like genuine interaction and understanding anymore? Like we've
just
devolved to the point where it's like, well, we're just like little monkeys pushing buttons and like being distracted by shiny objects.
I see it. My brother's 7 years younger than me. So I just turned 27 in July. He just turned 20. And, his generation is very different. I'm not going to be one of those people that's like, ugh, that generation. Cause like, I think there's a lot of good that comes out of his generation as well. But even just like, I forget, I don't feel like I'm older. I still feel like I'm like 20. So when I hang out with his friends and stuff, sometimes I'm like, I just leave just like, so like I don't even like flabbergasted. Like I just don't even, I can't even relate with them anymore. And I just like, don't understand their struggles. I don't understand their lifestyle. I don't understand. Like my brother literally plays so much video games. I love video games. I grew up with video games. I have been playing Stardew Valley on my laptop for like the last 3 months, and I have like, I don't even want to tell you how many hours I have in that farming game because it's embarrassing, but I have a really great farm, so worth it. But like, it's his life. Like he literally like plays in these competitions and thinks that he can, I don't think he really thinks he can make a career out of it, but it's like actually a very common, I've talked to, and this is anecdotal, but I've talked to a lot of kids his age who are like, yeah, I want to be on YouTube, or yeah, I want to play, you know, games professionally, or yeah, I want to do this. And
internet,
like,
personality.
Yes.
Yeah,
and it's
and
like
it's
the
like,
internet is, that's like, they live through the internet.
Yeah.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, I don't even know, Snapchat. I don't have a Snapchat. I hate Snapchat. I don't have an Instagram. I have a Facebook, and like, that's enough. I need to like limit myself with social media, or else I'll get crazy. But he, like, that's his life. That's how he communicates. There are times where he chooses not to hang out with his friends, but he'll still hang out with his friends, but virtually. They'll sit each at their homes playing a game together, but they're not together. And I just, like, that's something that is foreign to me.
Yeah, it's so different. And like, I wonder how it all plays out. You know, like, is there going to be a pendulum swing back to like,
I hope
oh my
so.
God, have you guys ever been to a bar? They're amazing. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I mean, you think, I feel like that's how history tends to happen. I mean, because
ups and downs,
eventually
ups and downs,
there's going to be a like, well, like the population was like the human race managed to procreate on the backs of the people who managed to leave their house for more than 2 minutes. You know what I mean? Like at some point it's going to have to like turn, but because how much worse, like how much worse can it get? Like the people, cause I have a sister who's 10 years younger than me, but she's, so I guess she's 25 now, but she's kind of like a young 25.
Yeah.
And I was worried for a while that she was going to become one of those shut-ins, you know, because like she lives on Long Island And I like visited her at her first apartment that she had on her own. And there was just boxes everywhere of like boxes from the groceries getting delivered, Chinese food getting delivered, pizza getting delivered, Amazon getting delivered. And it was just like, oh, and she didn't have her driver's license yet. So it was just like, you can not leave your house for a really, really long time.
Yeah. You can work from home. You can do everything from home.
And it was just like, oh shit. You know, like the next time I see her, she's not going to be able to fit through the door.
Right.
You know? And luckily getting a driver's license prompted her to like have a reason to leave her house and like go do stuff. And it was just like, oh, thank God. And like, she's doing fine. She still orders way too much shit on Amazon, but like, I'm not worried about her in that way anymore, but it's like, those outcomes are possible in a way that they didn't used to be.
Oh yeah. You know? I mean, I consider myself fortunate because I've always been like the kind of like, I like the internet. I have Amazon Prime. It's great for some things, but I don't love it, but I do. I like love to hate it. Grocery shopping. Like I'm never like, yes, but at the same time, like I like going to the store and like picking out my own food, even like that Hannaford to go thing. Like, no, buy your own groceries. Like it's fine. Or like, I don't know, just like being outdoors. But on the other hand, I do understand, like I suffer from anxiety and depression and sometimes it's so crippling. And anxiety and depression is like on the rise. Like generationally, like it's just getting worse. And we are so overstimulated where we live. Like sometimes I'm like, I don't want to leave my house. Yeah. I don't want to go into the public because not to mention the politics of it all, but also just like, the chaos of the way that we live. There's a lot of expectations. You're expected to work a lot more. You're expected to kind of be everything, like do everything all the time. Yeah. And I know for my brother, like I see it in him. He has like crippling anxiety sometimes. Yeah. I think that's why he stays inside a lot or chooses. He's introverted. I'm not. He is. But like, I see that he like wants to do more, but it's just really
Well, and it probably gets harder and harder with each passing day because you haven't gained the experience of like if you've grown up with the internet and you've grown up with the like civil, the political and other like it's not just politics, all kinds of discourse are totally based around anonymous yelling.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you've literally never seen civil discourse take place.
Right.
Outside of like, maybe if you're lucky, your own home.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it's just like, that's a thing that just like, it's a behavior that's never been modeled and you've never had a reason. So like, of course anxiety's going up. Like legitimate social interactions are terrible. You know, like at least when I'm at home, I can control the input and I can control like who I do and don't talk to. And if I do get in a fight with someone, I can just turn on caps lock and like not have a name and face anyway, or just delete it, you know? And, or if like being rejected, it's just like, okay, well no, next thing,
you
know, I never have to feel that, you know, but like, yeah, social interaction is hard, but like you have to like do it to gain experience at it. And there's just, it's easier and easier to not do it.
It is.
And never mind how like overwhelming the amount of options there are is. You know what I mean? Like going to the grocery store, like, yeah, I like doing it too. And for some, in some part, it's just like, oh, this is a reason to leave the house. Like there's always something I could stand to get more dog food or whatever. But like, on the other hand, like shit, all I need is one can of tomato sauce and there's 15,000 cans of tomato sauce. How do I possibly pick the right one?
Oh, don't even get me started. Yeah. And then
you know, if there were two, I could pick between the two, you know what I mean? And like,
we have two in general. We like, I just think we do live in this like land of excessiveness where, and not even excessiveness. I mean, the whole food thing. I mean, I've changed my diet drastically in the last couple of years, but like my diet was so poor.
Yeah.
And I definitely suffered from it. I had high, I'm I'm like a small framed short woman, but like I had high cholesterol 1 year because I ate so much fast food during college, and yeah. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And it was a wake up call, and I immediately stopped eating fast food. I'll do it every once in a while now because I still love it, but it's like not even food. And when you go to the grocery store, I'm like, I like eating. I do. Yeah. I'm not the kind of person that's like, I only eat lettuce and kale. Like, no, I like eating red meat. I like eating cookies. I like those things, but it's very, actually grocery shopping, I do it and I like it, but it is a source of anxiety because I spend way more time in the grocery store reading labels, trying to figure out, is this killing me? Like, is what chemicals are in the, I mean, it's ridiculous that, and I could see it in my brother. My brother eats terribly, but I think for him, just the anxiety of like, it's so cumbersome to be like, in order to eat well, the amount of research and all the things you have to do, and the fact that you have to cook for yourself, which he's 20. So like, you know, I sometimes remind myself, was I cooking meals at 20? No, but like it is, it's a heavy burden to bear. And that, I think that's just like, I've slowly learned how to like navigate through this world. And my husband's been deployed for 3.5 months and I've never lived on my own. So I've learned so much like independently, and it's been great for me, but I'm also an extroverted person who enjoys going out and enjoys doing new things. And it's still hard. It's so hard. And I almost feel bad for the generation after me because I mean, even just career wise, I remember being like 16, 15 and people are like, so what are you going to college for? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. I'm 15. Yeah. Like I just got my period. Like,
and then you do go to college and you're like, or you leave college and you're like, wait a minute, this is useless anyway.
Yeah. So. Seriously. Oh my God. We talk about this all the time. How like, I mean, I think like some degrees are worthy, like, I don't know, maybe a doctorate, maybe like a medical doctorate, but like at an undergrad level, it's all fucking nonsense.
Totally. I mean, and that's the other thing is like, you can like major in English and then decide to become a doctor and then you like go to medical school, or like maybe you'll have to go back and take some classes to like prepare for it or whatever.
For sure.
But like you don't have to choose based on your undergrad degree. You can, like, you could have majored in psychology and become a psychologist.
Right.
But like, you know, I majored in American culture. What do you, there's no American culture job. You know what I mean? It's just like, oh, I went and learned, you know,
I know so much about American culture.
Kind of. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
So it's like, what do you do? I'm a bartender, you know? So it's just like,
oh, me too. I do wine tastings and I do not use my psych degree for that.
No.
There's not a qualification for that job.
Yeah,
it's great. But I mean, I think in some sense it is worth it. I am pursuing a master's degree. I'm going to be applying to a master's program in April in nursing because I've decided women's health is definitely where I want to be, and I have the qualities to be a nurse and whatever. But I think that is like, I know I'm going to learn in that program. I know I'm going to go in. I know I'm going to be like hands-on and practical. But even though I always have to keep in the back of my mind, like, hands-on experience is how you know, like internships, all those things are how you learn things, because I've worked a lot of jobs where like my degree did nothing for it. I mean, you learn on the job. I think there were a lot of skills I learned in college, but I also can see with the amount of debt that you get going into college, like those are skills you can learn without college.
Yeah.
And I see it in my brother. I mean, he works at Home Depot. He likes it. It's fine. He's 20. That's fine. They pay pretty well and they have good benefits and, they're very flexible. And, you know, he has really no interest in going to school. And I have so many family members that are just like pushing it down his throat. And I'm just like, leave him alone. Like, this is why, like, this is why he can't make decisions and he doesn't want to do it. Cause like you're pushing it so hard and he sees it. He can see the people around him. He sees how much debt I have. And like, granted, I've made it work, but like, I mean, I went to school for 6 years and I have like $30,000 in debt, which is nothing.
Yeah.
See, to me, I'm still like every payment I make, I'm like, damn it.
Yeah.
But like, there are people who graduate with like 6 figures in debt and have like a degree in like early education or something like that.
It's questionable about whether that'll still be worth it. You know, I mean, I don't even know if it is now.
I don't know. Like, I know.
And or in order for it to be worth it, you have to like go to undergrad for a specific thing and then go to grad school for a specific thing and then go straight into that job. You know,
right.
Like if you have any amount of like, well, I'm not quite sure, I want to make a career change, like you're immediately screwed.
It's true.
Because like you can't earn enough to pay off that debt. And like, you know, imagine I'd just been working at Home Depot since I was 18. Like the money could have just been going up instead of, you know what I mean? So like,
exactly. If there's room for growth and there's opportunities, which there are for him. I mean, I don't think that is, there's nothing wrong if that's what he wanted to do. I'd be right. Like, go for it. You're working. He lives with my mom still, but he's paying bills and he's doing what he has to do and he's happy. I mean, to me, that's what really matters.
Yeah.
I think there's just so much, I know my dad used to do it all the time, but like, you know, all these different definitions of success and like what it means to be successful. And it is generational, but my dad was always like, you find a job, you work really hard, and that's what success is. And I just don't see success as the same way. And that right. was always like really hard for us because he would be like, you change jobs a lot, or you do this or you do that, or you work a lot for free, which I do because I do a lot of volunteering. But like, to me, That stuff's important, arguably yeah. more important than some of the bullshit jobs that I've done.
Well, and it's, I would imagine that you identify yourself a lot more as someone who's worked like closely and very hard for Planned Parenthood than as someone who sells wine or whatever, you know,
yeah,
like,
it's true.
This is who I am. This isn't, you know, and this thing over here is just sort of like a detail.
It's true. You know? It depends who I talk to. I always have to like, I hate that it's a thing, but when people are like, oh, what do you do when I meet someone new? I'm like, do you hate Planned Parenthood? So yeah. I have to be like, I do wine tastings, but I also do some nonprofit women's health work. And then I'll like eventually, you know, scope
you, like,
them
feel
out.
It out.
Yeah, yeah. But sometimes I'm like, sometimes I know I'm like, oh no, I just do wine tastings yeah. and I just move on. But I would identify myself first as an activist for women's health and women's rights. And then I don't really define myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is something I do because I make $30 an hour and it pays my student loans. Like, and I get free wine, which is pretty cool. Like, I don't hate that job by any means. I actually really like it. It's really great. I'm so glad I stumbled upon it when I ran for office, and it just works so well with my schedule. And I'll probably stay there, honestly, throughout grad school.
Yeah.
But like, it's not, in no way do I go to work and feel like I'm making a difference or feel like I'm doing anything. I mean, I guess it's kind of needed for some people, but then there's like, are you an alcoholic? Like, should I be giving you this? It's a whole nother layer.
Yeah. The like enablement. That's, yes. That's one of the things that I like about the job I'm in now. So like the whole reason I decided to apply there is like, I always thought I would enjoy being a bartender, except I don't know how to make drinks and I don't like staying up late at night. And I was like, oh, cool. I can work till 7 and I only have to pour one thing. And I'm only allowed to serve people up to one flight. So I don't ever have to worry about like
cutting people
figuring
off.
Out, yeah, over serving or like kicking people out if they get rowdy. It's like, it's not that kind of a place, you know? So it's
well,
like,
North Country is great because they are, I mean, they're a small business.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I actually, when I ran for office, David Waters and I did a tour. And we're just like talking to them about how legislation affects them and all this stuff. And it was actually really cool. And they're just like really cool people, that are very they've supported Planned Parenthood. They, I don't know. I think they're a real staple of Rawlingsford. I'm always trying to talk them up because Rawlingsford, again, is so small and we have like nothing. And I'm like, but look at this great cidery that we have.
Yeah.
And I love North Country and I can definitely see the appeal. And you, I don't know, like, it was such chill people that come in. There's a puppy once.
Totally. It feels great. it feels really good being there. So yeah, I just want to ask you a little bit more about like Planned Parenthood and then, kind of wrap it up.
Yeah.
But, so in your involvement there, like describe like what you've done for them over the years, like what you're doing there now and sort of like how it's, what it's meant to you personally to be so involved with that organization.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll start off with like why I joined. So, from a very young age, I always had a lot of like menstrual problems. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was 13, I had a cyst the size of, I don't know, what would you compare this as?
A softball?
A softball on one of my ovaries.
Wow.
And it burst.
Wow.
And it was like the most painful thing. And I love my parents, but they definitely like fed into that idea that like being a woman is pain and you're just going to deal with pain and you need to just accept that.
Wow.
And I remember like sitting in the fetal, 13 years old, like sitting in the fetal position on the couch being like, there's something really wrong. And they're like, you just have cramps. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why? There's no way that this is just part of this.
There's no way this is normal.
Exactly. Yeah. And then eventually they took me to the hospital. I had my first pelvic exam in the hospital by somebody who was not trained as a gynecologist that used the wrong size speculum. It was so painful. It was horrible. And then they're like, holy shit, you had a huge cyst and it burst. And I was like, whoa. And then my dad felt so bad. He like got me McDonald's. It was great. 'Cause he was like, he bought me chicken selects. I was very excited. And, that was like my first really bad experience, like being a woman.
Yeah.
And then it just escalated from there. I always had problems. I always got sick all the time with periods. I always like had my period and everybody would tell me, this is part of being a woman. This is this. And I just believed it because when you're that young, you know, and your family and people who care about you are telling you that, you're like, all right, what do I know?
Yeah. And you've never experienced something before and someone tells you this is normal and you're like, okay, right. Well, buckle up. You
right.
know?
Especially when it's like your parents, like they love me. Right. So like, why would they say that if
right.
it wasn't true?
Right.
So, as I got, I just dealt with it. I mean, nothing helped me. I feel like it affected high school a lot because I was sick a lot, yeah. honestly. And I would just ignore it. Granted, I feel like it's, I have a really high pain tolerance, which is cool, I guess. But like, it got really bad and it was college that it really started, escalating to the point where like I was bedridden one summer.
Wow.
And I had like a fever the whole time. It was terrible. I was vomiting. I had a lot of bowel problems. It was just crazy. And I finally found this gynecologist that was like, I think you have endometriosis. And I was like, what is that? And turns out my mom had it and had a full hysterectomy at like 30 years old from it, which I don't know why she never told me that until that moment. And, it's very hereditary and, it's basically just when the inner lining of the uterus grows outside of the uterus. So it can grow anywhere. Like there are women where it grows in like their brains.
Wow.
It's crazy. That's a very like extreme case. But for me, I actually ended up having it in my whole entire pelvis. So all my organs were adhered together when they did my surgery. So it went 10 years undiagnosed.
Wow.
And in that time frame, I've seen every doctor. I was diagnosed with Crohn's. I don't have Crohn's, but I was diagnosed with Crohn's.
Whoa.
Which Crohn's is something you can see. So I never really understood why, like, they never found Crohn's, but they were like, you have it though. Like, it just crazy. I saw a psychiatrist that told me that I was like mentally ill and that it was all in my head. I mean, it was crazy, but
that's
horrible. Like persevered through it all. I got this amazing gynecologist who I still see and I love her. She did my surgery and immediately
she
felt better.
Saved your life.
Yeah, she did. And when I mean, this is a story that I have, kind of honed in over the years and I definitely use it. It's like in my back pocket when we talk about,
well, it's your story.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. And that's when Planned Parenthood came into play was after I had the surgery, I recovered. And then I have a lot of secondary issues because of it. Like it just, you know, it was on my bladder, it was on my bowels. I will forever have problems and there's no cure. So I will likely have to have surgery like every 5 to 7 years.
Wow.
Because all they do is basically excise it. They can see the tissue and they just take it out. I wish there was a cure. I'm working on it. I had to have another surgery that spring. This was in 2013, I believe. 14? 14. And I was in Manchester and I was like just feeling really shitty. It was like definitely getting depressed because I wasn't working. I always have worked like 60 hours a week, at least two jobs, going to school, doing something. And I was just not feeling great. And then I'm like, you know what? I can sit here and feel bad or I can like do something. And I'd always, my parents themselves were never like, my dad was kind of conservative, not socially, but fiscally. My mom just like kind of did whatever my dad did. They never really talked about Planned Parenthood. They were never like negative or positive about it. But like, I don't know why. I don't know how I learned about it or when in my life, but I always liked it. I just always thought it was a great like resource. I used to take my friends in high school and I was like, you know what? When I think of women's health, I think of Planned Parenthood. So I was like, maybe they have some opportunities. And sure enough, they needed volunteers as they always do. And I started volunteering in Manchester and I was doing like, I don't know, like a couple hours every few weeks. I volunteer for the New Hampshire Action Fund. So that's like the political branch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started becoming more involved with politics and, like, you know, showing up at the state house and voicing my opinion about things and organizing events. And I remember one of my first really big events in Manchester was we did a condom crawl, which is when you go like from bar to bar. And instead of like doing a bar crawl where you just drink at every bar, we would like have these little like baskets that had like condoms and a pamphlet and all this information. And it was actually really amazing. I didn't know how I was going to go. Especially because Manchester can be a little conservative, but in the bar scene, it was great. I mean, I talked to people. I mean, people were like coming up to me and asking me questions that I couldn't believe. Like people who are like in their 40s asking me if like the pull-out method's an effective use of birth control. Like, and I was like, oh my God. And that's when it was like so eye-opening to me that like, holy shit, we need education and we need Planned Parenthood. Like, oh my God. And then I kind of just like became obsessed with it. And I just like started showing up to more meetings and started developing more events. And then I moved to the Seacoast because my husband works at the Pease Air National Guard base. And we had had like a couple of volunteers here. And that's when I like kind of just transitioned into a leadership role because I just naturally am a leader and I just took it on. And in the last like year, we've built up a really strong base. I think we have like over 30 supporters now. I'm no longer the leader. I'm moving on. I haven't started yet, but I'm going to be doing more public affairs type stuff. Working on people telling their stories and helping them like hone in on their stories and understanding like how to tell it and how best effective it can be and all that. But yeah, we've done, I mean, I started off doing a lot of public speaking. I would go to events with like Jean Shaheen. Mm-hmm. I did a lot with Maggie Hassan when she was running, sharing my story, talking about the ACA. It was huge for me when my dad passed away. I lost my insurance immediately, which I did not know was a thing. Like, your dad's dead, and by the way, you have no insurance. Like, I was like, holy shit. And for someone with a chronic illness, I can't not have insurance. Like, I can't.
Right.
And I was having, it was 2 months before my wedding. I'm planning my dad's funeral. I'm dealing with my family. And I start having problems. So I went to Planned Parenthood. And they like, obviously they're not, Planned Parenthood is not like equipped to deal with like a chronic illness in that sense, but they were able to at least like get me comfortable and like help me in the meantime until I can get back on insurance and go to my specialist. And they were amazing. It was actually like, I had never used it. I used it a couple of times in the past for like Plan B when I was younger, but like I had never really like gone in an appointment for like preventative health and things like that. And it was like, it was hands down, like some of the best healthcare I've ever received, like from genuinely passionate people who were like, really like talk to me about my dad and grieving and all this other stuff. Not in like a weird way. Some people are like weird when someone dies. They were like, they were cool.
Yeah.
And, so I would talk about that. And I kind of like started this little like public speaking career, I guess. And, I loved it. I love talking to people. I love having an impact. I spent a lot of time in the last couple of years, bird dogging Chris Sununu.
What does that mean?
So bird dogging is when you like know that a politician is going to be somewhere and you like, you know what they're going to talk about and you come up with like specific questions to ask them to like throw them off track. And, governor now, unfortunately, Sununu, like knows me, like knows my name. Like I went to his inauguration. He's like, oh, Alyssa. I was like, hello. Like, you know,
so what's that relationship like?
It's weird. It's a weird one. Because like I respect him as a person and he is our governor. Like I got to respect that. But the first interaction we really had was when he was an executive counselor and he decided to defund Planned Parenthood. It was on him. He was supposed to be the pro-choice moderate counselor and then was like, meh, you don't need that funding. So I actually, the first time I met him, I went to work afterwards. I was at the meeting when he defunded us and I had dyed my hair pink and it was super long. So I think he recognized me at work. I was managing an ice cream shop in Exeter and he walks in and I was like, no, cause I was so pissed. I was like upset, like angry, mad, like crying mad. Like, and, he's like, hey, I remember you. And I'm like, Yeah, I remember you too. And I was like, I'm not going to have a conversation with him because I'm at work and this is a professional space and it's not appropriate. But then he just like started going, he's like, aren't you mad at me or something? And I'm like, are you asking me if I'm mad at you? Like, what even is this? So I ended up like going off on him in this ice cream shop. Granted, I'm very lucky it was in Exeter because like everyone in the shop was like pretty liberal and was like on my side, but he was like attacking me personally. And I was like, does your vote have anything to do with the fact that you're going to be running for governor? And this was way before he announced anything. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about and all this stuff. And here he is as our governor. And I'm just like, oh my God. But, and then I would just show up at events and it's almost funny because like, I like our relationship. Like I don't hate him by any means. I don't agree with him. And he did reinstate our funding because we worked so hard, to really like do some pushback on that. And I think he realized like, I should not fuck with Planned Parenthood, like, because I'm going to make a lot of women mad and men, like, but yeah, so it's a unique relationship, but it's like actually something I just kind of look forward to. I can appreciate that as much as I don't agree with him, that he remembers who I am. And I will say when I do speak to him, I don't feel like he's just like pandering. I do feel like he is listening to me. I don't know if he respects me and I don't know if he likes me, but, he does always greet me and he remembers who I am. And I think that's pretty cool. So yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen him in a while.
Like if someone who vehemently disagrees with you is willing to listen, that is worth something.
Yes.
You know? But it's also so infuriating when it's just like, oh, you said you believed this and then you did this thing. And then we're like smugly, like shoving it in my face and then changing your mind again. It's like, well, do you actually believe any of this shit or like, who are you working for?
Well, that's it. I do believe he is like, I don't like that we have this, like, politicians are like definitely stigmatized. They're all bad people, but he is like the epitome of your typical politician who I think his father was governor. And I think that he reminds me actually of like a very spoiled, like frat boy. Mm. And, I think he just like expected to win. He did. He won because of his name recognition. There's no going around that. He doesn't have that impressive of a history. Even as a governor, I think he has been playing his cards right. I mean, he has been doing things. I mean, there's the full day kindergarten. He did sign in the decriminalization bill for marijuana. I see him doing these little things and it actually makes me nervous because I'm like, oh shit, people are going to think that he's like this great moderate, but I don't think he is. I think he just likes being governor and I think he just likes...
How can I stay governor?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's just been in his family and it was just kind of expected that like, this is what I'm going to do. And I think he likes the attention.
Yeah.
I don't think he likes the attention when it's negative though, but that's the great part of him is that that's his weakness. He does not like when people attack him, he literally turns into like a child, like he gets defensive. It's like, that's why I enjoyed bird talking him because you ask him one question that he doesn't like, and he can't just like brush it off and just give a typical political response. He immediately attacks the person that says it. And it's really interesting to watch unfold. But to me, that's like, as a politician, you need to work on that skill, Sununu. You know, like you can't be doing that all the time. It's not going to work in your favor, but yeah, he's an interesting guy.
that would be like an interesting documentary, like about over the years, like your relationship with him.
Oh my God, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I kind of want to be like...
Just like Netflix presents Bird Dog.
It's just me just asking him all these questions and him just telling me that I'm a piece of shit, basically.
Well, really, just be like, hey, look, you started it. You came to my fucking ice cream shop.
Right?
You asked me. I was trying to be professional.
And he did tell me, which I would never say to him at this point, but I remember the last thing he said to me was, if you're so angry, why don't you run for office? But I like lost, so I can't be like, well, I did and I lost. Nobody likes me. Yeah, so and we'll do something else big. But
one of these days, you're going to run for office against him. Yeah. And it will be so sweet. Yeah.
Oh man, that would be the day. But there is a part again. It's like I do like him though. There's just something about him that I do. I like as a person, not as a politician. But yeah. That's like, to me, that's that missing piece. Is like, I can say that. I can be like, I really, really disagree with him. I really actually don't even like his personality that much. But the fact that we have this like relationship, when, yeah. I don't even know if it's positive or negative. I can't even define it.
But it is a relationship.
It's a relationship. Yeah. And I like that I can share those stories. And I like hope we can continue to like foster. I would love to just be like, hey, Sununu, you want to go get dinner? And just like...
Want to go get ice cream?
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
a place
right?
in Exeter.
But yeah, probably not going to happen. I think he's busy.
All right. So this is the last question I always ask in every episode. If you could do one thing every day forever, what would it be?
Oh my God.
Besides Bird Dog, Chris Sununu.
Oh, I wouldn't do that every day. That would be too exhausting. If I could do one thing every day, you know, it would be reading. Honestly, I've been reading so much lately because my husband's gone and I just like can do whatever I want all the time. Not that he's like controlling every aspect of my behavior.
Yeah.
No reading in this house. But like I just had so much more free time and I've been reading so much and I love reading. But reading just takes hours and hours yeah. and like I know a lot of people love reading and you just can't get to it. And I really enjoy reading. I think it's like when my husband and I talk about like having children and stuff, we're like, they're going to read. Like I want to instill that so bad. Cause I just think it's so important. It like, it makes me think, it expands my vocabulary. It's yeah. like, oh, I love it so much. And it's something that isn't, I mean, sometimes I read on my Kindle, which is technically a piece of technology, but
it's built specifically for that purpose.
Right. It's, yeah. I can't go on Facebook on my Kindle. My Kindle is like the first Kindle that was ever made. So it's like, it like barely works, but, it only has to do one thing and it's yeah. doing it. But yeah, I really enjoy like sitting outside. Like this summer I have a beautiful house on like 50 acres of land and I've been outside enjoying that or like at night staying up till like 2 a.m. and you're really into your book. I love, that's like the introverted part of me that I don't feel like I delve into enough. So
yeah.
That's what I would do for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's good talking to you.
Yeah. It's fun. My family.